Welcome back to the Pot of Greed.
Welcome back, guys. It's Thursday, and that means we've got more Yu-Gi-Oh! To talk about.
It's Wednesday for us.
Yeah, that's how I feel like that's like our new little, we just always start with that. It's Wednesday for us, but I'm saying it's Thursday.
Because every given episode, there's somebody watching that may not know that we shoot a day early, and they might be confused while we're not bringing up a particular story, you know?
Right. Well, anyways.
Assuming we get new viewers on the podcast.
Yeah, I'll just say, I don't know that we do. Well, anyways, welcome back to the pod. Hopefully you guys are having a good one. We certainly are. I think that this will be an exciting episode because while there isn't a load of new Yu-Gi-Oh!
There's just stuff.
There's just stuff.
And we kind of specialize at yapping about stuff, so
yeah,
seems like a pretty good week for us.
Yeah, as the only podcast that exists on the internet.
If we don't talk about stuff,
who else will? Yeah, that's true. That is a good point. I'm glad that you pointed that out. Anyways, before we get into the action, maybe do us a little favor.
Put your ones up.
If you're in the premiere, and if you're not in the premiere.
Premiere gang, rise up.
Then a thumbs up will do just nicely. Maybe a comment, a little engagement, share it with your friends. Let them know that this podcast exists. Subscribe even.
Or go ahead and just drop the most scathing piece of criticism you've ever levied against a content creator right here in our comment section.
Yeah.
We get those from time to time. So keep it up.
So let's start, I guess, with a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh! Duelist Advance happened. We didn't have a sneak peek for it.
No, we did not. We had to miss out. Well, we almost missed out, but then a buddy of ours showed up with a box to open on channel.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Yeah, our friend Ed got a box of Duelist Advance, and we were able to open it. And I was happy because, spoiler, I pulled a Starlight Rare Vanquisol Holly Sue.
Ooh, show it off, Paul.
I would, but I don't have it.
Oh, that's right.
Not mine. I just pulled it. But that was fun. I'm excited to play the Vanquisols. I mentioned that before.
I went ahead and took the new Super Quantals because for some ungodly reason, Konami went ahead and made all the new Super Quantal support common.
I can't imagine why they would do that. Yeah.
I'm very upset.
Other than that, though, there was some neat little tidbits of Yu-Gi-Oh! News. For instance, the official KDE US Yu-Gi-Oh! Trading Card Game Tournament policy documents have been updated, according to Konami. They posted this on social media.
That was damn near a word-for-word quote of the post.
Yeah, this is only a few hours ago as of the time that I'm reading this, but what's sort of annoying is that while they link to the new policy document, they do not just highlight what the actual changes are.
So you have to read the whole thing and then compare it to an older copy and read that whole thing, and then you can see where it's different.
Yeah, I don't really know why they do this, given that like every modern game company, if there's ever like an update to something, they'll just kind of be like, okay, here's what changed.
Or not even just game companies. Literally anybody on social media, if there's a series of changes to an established document, they just summarize the changes and link the document.
Well, thankfully, people have gone to the trouble of doing that for us. So here are the major changes. It's really not much. Like always with these tournament policy docs things, they're usually just more so clarifications on previously ambiguously worded sort of clauses and stuff.
Like, yes, you do have to wash your hands before offering your opponent a handshake for Yu-Gi-Oh! Friendship.
So they,
Oh, God, that's not a rule, is it?
It should be.
It really should be.
They clarified some information on the fan content areas at these YCS events, where it's like a space that, you know, you can use for recording deck profiles and like interviews and similar things. I think that they added that there's not going to be like power banks or something there anymore. I remember somebody saying something like that.
They used to have power banks?
They didn't have them all the time, but I think like recently they did. They would have like power banks. I saw them at YCS Houston.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they were kind of reneging on the power bank thing just because that is an extra logistical hurdle that not every venue will be able to accommodate as easily.
Yeah, they probably don't want to have to be like held accountable for it. Because like in the previous documents, I think that they even said that there might be that at some of them and others not.
And I can already imagine the sheer amount of Yu-Gi-Oh! Players who would try and swing by just so they could like plug their phones in and like walk away. They're not even there to do media stuff.
They clarified a few bits of information around the media policy and getting media badges. So outlets that want to attend a YCS event would have to get a media badge in advance. Walk-up requests will not be granted. And I think that they just clarify that they can't interfere with tournament operations, player concentration, or obstruct event flow.
Paul, I think we might have been some of the very first people to ever get a media badge from Konami.
I think we were, actually. I remember the first event where they started doing the media badge system was like...
Was that
Dallas? YCS, maybe like Dallas or something, like 2019, 18, 19. I remember 19,
it wasn't very far. We had 17? And I remember we had three, I think we had three badges.
Yeah.
You had one, I had one, I think Trell had one.
Yeah, we were just kind of bouncing them around. But basically you had to like use it to record stuff. I didn't know that they still were really doing that. I think what they've since changed it to is like, if you're just a regular YouTuber, you go to the content area. Right. If you're like actually a member of the press, like journalistic site covering this local event, because that happens sometimes.
It does?
Apparently, like sometimes the local news will cover like things that are happening at the convention center.
I did not know that. Not often. It makes sense that it would happen. I've just never seen local news coverage of a Yu-Gi-Oh! Event.
There's some more information I saw on the use of Yu-Gi-Oh! Neuron. I think that they've now basically formalized that you have to use Yu-Gi-Oh! Neuron for like entering and sort of tracking through events.
Bro, we're cooked.
Yeah, I think that that's probably a good thing because it seems like that's sort of the norm that other card games are going with. Like the Bandai games all have... What is it called? TCG Plus?
Which was a nightmare to get established. But we're here now, so...
Yeah, and I think... I want to say... Does it Pokemon have an equivalent?
No idea.
I don't know.
Couldn't tell you.
I don't
play enough. Magic has an equivalent. They have their app thing. You can log into tournaments from the app. It actually... The Magic one works really well. I've never had any trouble with it.
I think more specifically, they said that they are now, like, getting rid of the physical, like, cards, period. Like... If you go to your card shop, you will not like get the sticker anymore or like a physical Kasi card. You just sign up on your phone.
It's just a pain for like older Yu-Gi-Oh! Players like me where I've had hell linking my actual Konami ID with my Neuron just because my Konami ID was made so long ago. There's information that has definitely been lost. And I don't even know how to access it anymore.
Yeah, I always had trouble like linking my Neuron with my Konami account for some reason. Like I don't, it tried to assign me a new ID and
it's,
like
it's because I know what happened. I remember they ended the Kasi system and then they created the Konami ID system, and we were supposed to like get migrated into that system, and then now you're supposed to take your Konami ID and link it to your Neuron. But we're so ancient.
Us fossils.
We did not properly bring our Kasi IDs over into the Konami ID system, or we literally just forgot the information associated with it.
Yeah.
And now, like, it's kind of... And then we've played Yu-Gi-Oh! Video games since, where we've probably made new Konami accounts on accident.
I mean, I still think it's probably better for them.
I've got three, Paul. Three!
It's still probably better for them to just make it all digital than physical, because, like... Yeah. It's still, like, I remember back when they had, I guess there were UDS points and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, one PDF that, like, they just updated. And you had to go on the website and, like, load the PDF. And like,
ooh, that was the time.
It took, like, a full minute to even load. And then you had to, like, just kind of control F to find your name. And, like, people's names are all entered in weird ways. There'd be, like, Paul M and then, like, PM and then Paul. Like, I was just like, oh, my God. It just... Things like that were... So, I mean, I think just keeping it, like, in a digital way is probably for the best, but it's going to take some...
I just wish they would have done the work themselves instead of leaving it to us to mess it up. If they had all of our IDs in a database already, they could have just migrated that nonsense themselves.
Well, you would still have to, like, link it still, like, in some way. Because, like, if you just buy a new phone today and you download the Neuron app, you'd still have to like sign in some way.
That's
so
true.
I guess
that's true. It's so still ultimately on me to actually remember.
Now,
some
here's
of
a new Neuron thing too. Is that you are apparently now allowed to judges can use Neuron to record penalties in addition to just match results.
So like What is it? They make fun of you and they record it and send it to Konami? I don't understand.
Like, I guess if you're at a YCS, a judge can put the penalties down, like mark them on your account per event, and you can see them on Yu-Gi-Oh! Neuron.
Oh, like, okay. I was thinking record as in video, like.
Oh, no. Imagine that. Like, they're going to penalize you. They just like, whip out their phone.
They whip out their phone. They grab a bottle of hot sauce. You got to down it on camera.
Yeah.
This is your penalty.
It's a humiliation ritual.
They haze you on stream.
Yeah, so there's that. And I think that they also said you're now able to keep track of life points on Neuron with even with like airplane mode. I think it used to be like airplane mode had to be on or something.
But then you can't use the card database.
I should probably say, by the way, this is all like, I'm not reading this from any official source. It's just some stuff people said on social media. So like, take my words with a grain of salt. Read the actual documents yourself.
This is a podcast. We actually don't have to like
abide by anything.
Use real sources or even speak facts.
There's no fact checking.
We try to, but we don't have to.
But yeah, I think they used to have it where like if you use Neuron for life points in an official tournament, you still had to like have it on airplane mode. But now I think you don't have to, and it's just that like you still have to be like on do not disturb and some stuff like that.
At that point, you know, whether or not you're in do not disturb or not, I don't even know if that matters anymore. But whatever,
they
like you
clarified
can clarify
some stuff on what public and private knowledge is.
Oh Jesus!
I don't know the specifics, but that's just what they said. They also clarified that spectators have to remain silent and cannot communicate in any way with duelists during a match. And they have clarified that you can be like removed for violations as a spectator. So if you know you're trying to signal to your homie from the card shop who's in top cut how to play or how to, you know, whatever, just communicate something.
He's like, you start signing to them. Hand, clap, trap, hand trap.
Yeah, that's right.
That. You sign the play to them.
Yeah, say phones must remain visible on the table at all times. Notifications must be silenced or disabled.
So essentially, if you're using Neuron to track life points while playing the game, your phone needs to be on the table, face up, invisible.
Because the thing is, I think they realized that requiring you to be in airplane mode meant that you couldn't actually use the Neuron feature of looking up card effects,
right?
Which was part of the, I guess, you know, yeah.
And I guess it wouldn't be feasible to have people download the entire database into their phones as a major space constraint.
As always, remember to read this shit yourself. Because, that was just like a synopsis based on something I saw somebody post online.
Well, you can't ask people to do something you won't even do.
Well, Konami's asking them to do something they won't even do.
Well, that's true, but we're supposed to be better than Konami. We're a podcast.
That's true. So, yeah, that happened. Check the tournament policy docs. I guess they'll be into effect here in the next bit. Week, weekend, whatever. So
was there a date on it, or did it just?
I think it just becomes.
It's real now.
It's what it is. It's real. It's happening. Is there any other Yu-Gi-Oh news? Because I feel like I didn't really see anything else this week. I might be missing something super duper obvious. But
you're asking me. I didn't even. I just assumed you had all. You had
Konami everything. Will be at San Diego Comic-Con. They have stated that.
I mean, that's cool because those booths are always really popular for all the like non like into Yu-Gi-Oh folks. But it's also really popular with people who currently play Yu-Gi-Oh because, well, we don't get a whole lot of ways to interact with this game if we're not literally slinging cards.
Right, yeah. And Yu-Gi-Oh Master Duel is, I think, also getting an update this week that will add Malice to the game. It's kind of a highly anticipated deck to come to the game. I guess it depends on who you ask. And I'm not really too into Malice, but someone is. So,
I mean, it's good that they're getting it into the game. It's just, well, it's kind of taken a while.
So it's always the Master Duel thing.
Because they've done the thing where they did the simultaneous releases for archetypes before.
Yeah, which I like.
And I don't know why I stopped doing that.
Oh, well, that reminds me, actually. I did start playing a new deck in Master Duel that I didn't expect to really build and play, but it recently got support, and that's Gladiator Beasts.
Oh, Gladiator.
Now, normally, I was kind of previously critical of the new Gladiator Beast support cards because I just felt that they sort of homogenized the deck with a lot of other things. But after playing it myself, I will admit that I think I was wrong. It actually still feels like it manages to keep a good bit of the Gladiator Beast DNA while still feeling fresh enough to, like, hold its own.
Well, yeah, I think now GLaDS can't put out an unbreakable board.
Yeah,
I mean, those boards are much more fragile than they used to be.
I don't know if they ever were not fragile, but...
I mean, they weren't great, but you would. The idea was you would put up three negations and call it a day. If your opponent broke through, you probably just lost, but if they didn't, you won. But I think nowadays, that style of board is not... It's not efficient in today's Yu-Gi-Oh! I think it's better to... I think now it's like you set up your engine... And you just try and grind.
Yeah, just make sure you can play something next turn.
So what is your GLaDS deck like? Because I haven't seen
the latest support cards. Yeah, so the new cards are these cards that came out in, I think in the TCG, this was stuff from Supreme Darkness. But it's basically that new Gladiator Beast, Gestell or something like that. Gestell. It's like it can summon itself and another GLaDS from your hand. And when it's summoned by the effect of a GLaDS, including itself, like with that effect, you get to search for a spell and trap. And then also, whenever you summon from your hand, the other Gladiator Beast will also get its effect because it was summoned from the effect of a Gladiator Beast. So you can actually use that as a really cool starter card and even trigger some of your like removal GLaDS effects, like Mermello and Bestiari. So it's kind of a fun time.
But it doesn't have the tag out effect.
It does. It has the tag out effect.
Oh, okay.
And then also, they have a field spell, which is... Flavian, I don't know how you say that.
I don't know.
Flavian, it's like a new Colosseum of the Gladiator Beasts, and it lets you search for GLaDS, lets you summon a GLaDS in the battle phase, and at the end of the turn, if you special summon a Gladiator Beast monster from the deck, you get to set a Gladiator Beast trap. So that's kind of a cool way to set up War Chariot, and also their new trap card, Gladiator Beast Charge, I think is what it's called, which basically is sort of like an Icarus Attack-esque thing, where basically... You just store face-up cards in the field equal to the number of, or up to the number of Gladiator Beasts that you have on the field. So it's just a form of removal. And alongside Chariot, I think...
Wait, is Charge new?
It might not be new.
That's what I thought. This card's from Chaos Impact.
Okay, so it's one of the older ones. I guess it was just not used, but now there's an easy way of accessing it. So
I, like, I played it back then. Because in that 2019 round of support, I played GLaDS a little bit. And... I didn't enjoy it.
And then the final one is the new boss monster, Claudius, which you can fusion summon actually just by shuffling five Gladiator Beasts, but you can shuffle them from your field or graveyard, or even I think in your hand, back into the deck to summon him. And when you do, you'll get to conduct your next battle phase twice.
Okay.
Which is actually a lingering thing. So like if you don't go to your battle phase, it will always just hang into the game state.
Huh.
So you'll always... Whatever your next battle phase is, you'll get to conduct it twice. And it's got some other little effects. It's a fun card. It's just
neat. I feel like there's a lot of like funky things you can probably pull off with back-to-back battle phases.
Basically, if he drops and you get to conduct two battle phases, you will win. Because like you will be doing so... Because literally like what will happen is you will attack with all your stuff. They'll mm-hmm. all get to swap and get all those effects. And then you'll do a whole other battle phase and attack again. And they'll all get to swap and all do their effects. And it's just by that point, like, the amount of, you know, pressure that that's putting on your opponent is probably such that you probably will have just won. Probably. Anywho.
Wait, real quick, I'm curious about one thing.
Okay. Oh, you're looking it up? Taking a look?
Yeah, because I was just trying to see, how does that interact with Zeus?
What do you mean?
Because it can... Well, no, you still won't be able to summon it. Can that mean you could just... Have your first battle phase, summon Zeus, have a second battle phase, but no.
Oh, no, yeah, it's all like immediate. Yeah,
it will be an immediate thing. Okay.
So it's a fun time.
I was just trying to see if I could break it real fast.
Yeah, figure out. I mean, I'm sure there's some bullshit. But that's been kind of a fun deck that surprised me. I've been laddering with it a little bit here and there. And I think that's all the Yu-Gi-Oh! News. I guess there's this.
What's this?
I have
not taken a good look at it.
SH Monster Arts Dark Magician.
Ooh, this is the Bandai thing.
Yeah, it joins Flame Wingman, Red Eyes, and Blue Eyes. I know that because I'm looking at them off screen over there. We put them all together. But yeah, this is the Dark Magician. These figures are cool because they are they're meant to be displayed. They're not nearly as expensive as ones from places like First Four figures. Those are a lot like heavier and more immobile.
These are posable versus like, you know, those statues that they don't really move or... They don't move well.
Yeah, these are posable. You can usually kind of change arms and weapons and like.
He even has a dark magic attack he shoots. I don't know if you guys can see that, but he does.
Yeah, so I'll probably be putting that together here in a bit. I thought that was kind of neat. Comes to you from Bandai Namco. And maybe we'll put some links in the description if Paul remembers too. All right, I think that's all the Yu-Gi-Oh! But there is more card game news. I think the first kind of Yu-Gi-Oh!-ish related card game news thing I wanted to talk about...
What's that?
...was these top grossing Android card games lists. You know, this is one of those things that comes out every month.
Oh, like mobile card games.
Yeah. So of all the mobile games, we can just have a glance at how much revenue they've each made.
So in first place, it should come as literally no surprise. TCG Pocket, Pokemon TCG Pocket, $51 million grossed. I don't know what the time frame for it is, but that's a lot of money for virtually any time frame.
I believe this is like the past month, so I think that this is like...
That's sick.
June, yeah.
$51 million in a month is sick.
No, the newcomer to this...
is Shadowverse Worlds Beyond in second place with $20 million.
That's actually a little impressive to me because I remember, you know, we've been talking about Shadowverse the past couple weeks now, and people have had mixed opinions on its monetization system. Some people say it's too much. Others say it's not all that bad. But what I didn't expect was that it would be as popular as it was because this basically means like a lot of people have to be playing this game for it to be far and away above, like, the rest of the competition outside of TCG Pocket.
I mean, Shadowverse, like, the original Shadowverse was a very popular mobile card game. It just kind of fell off and kind of sunk into its niche. But it had pretty much 100% of that population plus all the new interest in the game. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the Cygames team that make the game have probably learned a lot of lessons about the modern card gaming space, and it showed up as a $20 million app.
Yeah, so clearly, despite the fact that people are complaining about the monetization, they seem to still be spending.
Well, they've already announced that there's a tournament circuit with cash prizes. So, yeah, like, a lot of people are upset about the microtransactions within the game.
Yeah, I guess I'm not being fair because I'm assuming that the people complaining are the people spending. Yeah. But it's probably just two separate groups of people.
But the people who have their eye on the cash prize.
Yeah, they're willing.
They're going to throw a few dollars around. They're willing
to put the money down like, no matter what.
Like, you know, if they get a chance to go and compete in their, you know, the world championship, you know, what's a few dollars? Mm. Now, that's not me saying that I support the Shadowverse microtransaction and monetization scheme. I'm just saying that for some people, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm going to get cooked in the comments, I know.
You're supporting them stealing our money.
Anyway. Well,
number three is Magic the Gathering Arena, which actually went up a spot.
We knew it had to make the list. But
yeah, it apparently moved up a spot according to this.
I think more importantly, other things fell spots.
Yeah, Hearthstone fell. What is this? This isn't Duel Masters, is it? Is that that number five thing?
I feel like this is like a Mahjong-style game. Okay. I literally cannot tell. It's just in kanji, y'all. We don't know.
That means it's probably Duel Masters.
Like,
because someone told us about this last time.
It could be Duel Masters. Duel Masters is incredibly popular. I just know that there's another game further down with almost the same exact icon. So that makes me wonder.
Oh, well, yeah, then Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel fell to slot six. Now, I will say to most of these games, it fell a spot. They all kind of had to because Shadowverse only just popped up and shot up. Mm-hmm. So it isn't meant to say that, like, oh, Master Duel and Hearthstone and Marvel Snap are all, like, dying and failing or whatever.
But then why did Arena hold? Arena went up a spot.
Yeah, so I wonder, was there a major expansion in Arena? I know the Magic stuff came out in Arena.
And Final Fantasy is in Arena.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I said the Magic stuff. Of course, Magic stuff's in Arena. Yeah, the Final Fantasy stuff came out in Magic Arena.
And I have had it reported to me by two individuals so far that they have collected every Final Fantasy card in Arena already.
Which, by the sounds of it, is probably easier than doing it in the paper game.
I mean, I think...
price-wise.
You know... there's no shortage of products when it's digital, right?
That's true. You can just always buy whatever you want to buy.
And I think Master Duel, at least this month, did not have a major like set release or a meta game shakeup.
Oh, you know what? I think that this is Duel Masters. This game, it's at number nine. Because I see the Duel Masters logo if you zoom in close enough.
Yep, that's Bullshock Dragon. Yep.
Okay. So between that and this WWE game, plus just the existence of Shadowverse, it actually bumped Duel Links down to number 10.
Duel Links, you know,
from previously number 7.
But even though Duel Links is ranked at number 10, and a lot of these games, you know, they're ranked in within the top 20, the revenue difference between them and the top two games,
I know,
it's just silly.
Well, it's actually funny when you think about the fact that Pokemon TCG Pocket makes more than all of the top 10 combined.
That's true.
Like, it easily dwarfs them.
51 million, and then Shadowverse only made 20 million, and Arena, 6 million.
So you're at 26, and you add about 5 for Hearthstone, that puts you at 31. And so even if you start adding everything else up, it just doesn't. Like, it's just making the top 10's amounts.
Like, the part that kills me is I still don't understand how TCG Pocket has people going hand over fist to buy these cards like that.
It is.
Maybe it's not that people are spending a lot of money. Maybe it's just a lot of people spending a little money. Because they could be. Because if half their player base all bought the little subscription thing, where, you know, that's cheaper than like just, go ahead, I'm just buying
this camera.
You good? Yeah. It buying the little subscription thing is cheaper than actually buying the Poke Gold to like get more packs to open, and a subscription will provide you with more packs to open. So and in most games, that's considered the more like cost effective strategy. So if half their player base is like, well, I'm going to do the more cost effective thing.
I think like a lot of people, I think it's what you said. I think it's a lot of people spending a little money, because I know that they have like a monthly thing, like that little system where you just get a little bit of stuff each month. I think that most people, I don't know if I said most people, but I think there's a fair amount of people who probably just signed up for that.
Because it's fairly easy to work with. I believe it's like $10 a month. You get a 2-week free trial. And $10 a month, while for some people that's too much for a subscription, for others, that's the cheapest they'll spend on a mobile game.
I mean, I think the way that I think about it too is that given the type of game that TCG Pocket is, where like, it's more about just forming a day-to-day habit of like, log in, open packs, done for the day, log in, open packs, like do it twice a day. It kind of it gets you into a rhythm.
It does.
So while you're in a rhythm, there will be times when you kind of want that rhythm to speed up already. And I think that's where having the subscription probably helps, because it sounds, at least to me, like something that's, to the average person, I think it would read as smarter than buying like a $50 gym pack or something,
right?
Whatever that equivalent is. Instead, it's just like $10 to basically be able to open a lot more each day. And I think that that kind of sounds like what it would be.
Because if I remember correctly, I think you open up double the amount of packs in 24 hours if you have a subscription.
Yeah, it might be a little more than that.
It might even be a little bit
more. Because I mean, they give you like, you know, the energy, stamina things, but also more of every resource, I believe.
Because I had the 2-week trial, and I bought it once after. You get a second bar, so you have two resource bars when you have a subscription. The first one's your normal bar, where every 24 hours you get two packs. And then the other bar, I have no idea what the time of it was, but it felt like I was opening double. And when you're trying to like fill out these sets to complete them before the next set comes out, there's real value in that. Though I do have to wonder, how much value is there in completing a full digital set? I don't
know. Now, my understanding, too, about this list, I guess it's probably worth mentioning, too, is that I think that this is only for Android, or it might just be only for mobile.
Because I
know it does not include Steam, and I know it doesn't include like console games. So certain games that are, like, I would imagine, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel probably is making quite a lot more than just what's represented on this list. Especially,
Master Duel has a lot of console players.
Especially, Master Duel has a lot of PC players. And I think a lot of the whales are typically playing on PC. I'm always surprised that there are even people who play Master Duel on their phones. Just because my experience with it on the phone is that it's too stressful for me.
But some people, they can't afford PCs or consoles. And you know, everyone has to have a phone to some degree.
Yeah, you know, that's true. So, yeah, I thought it was just an interesting list. It's always kind of nice to take a look at these, see where the games are, kind of where they're landing. I think that we're due pretty soon then for like a Q2 analysis of physical card game sales, probably from ICV2 or something like that. They typically will update that based on TCG player sales each quarter. And so since June just ended, probably here in a few weeks, they'll have all the sales data for that. And we can take a look at what games are selling the best.
I mean, we know Magic will see a huge surge with the Final Fantasy set having released and had a full few months of, or not few months, it's been 1 month, right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, 1 full month of sales. I mean, I'm sure they're way up right now. Pokemon Destined Rivals with Team Rocket, that's a very popular set. They're going to be up. Yu-Gi-Oh! Won't be that up.
Yeah, I don't know that Yu-Gi-Oh! Will. But Yu-Gi-Oh! had it had its like heydays with like those rarity collections and stuff.
Yeah.
It feels like basically it kind of, to me, shows the importance of your game having like a surge product.
Yep, something that is going to just draw in lots of sales all at once.
And that's actually a good segue into another brief article. This is from ICV2. I don't have it on our raindrop list because it's subscription only, but I got a little synopsis of it from a certain place. So,
this man just admitted to stealing an article.
So I got a little synopsis of this article.
The pot of greed does not condone his actions.
Here's basically what the headline of the article was talking about, how like retailers navigating supply and flippers in the red hot TCG market. So basically the topic of this is how retailers have been having a lot of trouble with these high demand products, these surge products that these games have been releasing, namely Final Fantasy, Destined Rivals, and there's other games that have it too. But yeah, the key takeaways being that, you know, demand is really high and supply can't keep up. And flippers have been distorting market access. And that's kind of the big part of this. Is basically secondary market scalpers, or sometimes called flippers, are buying these limited TCG products in bulk and then trying to resell them at inflated prices. And it exacerbates the scarcity problem at retail stores. So, you know, it's the typical experience you've come to expect. Yeah. Costco, Walmart, Target can't get anything. Card shops struggle to get allocations of stuff.
Because, I mean, I remember, you know, pre-pandemic, before we had the big TCG boom, when a new like card set for virtually any card game came out, you only had to compete against the people in your local area to get products. And then you didn't have to compete all that hard because everyone had hard limits on what they were willing to spend. But in today's card game economy, it's actually very common for somebody to just roll up to the shop and try to buy half a case worth of any given product, not because they can't afford it or even want that much product, but because they want to sell it for a higher price online.
I do think that there's also a that worldwide nature of trying to get products that you pointed out, where it's like it used to just be that, well, you're maybe competing against the people in your town that would normally be buying products. Now you're competing against people in your town who heard that these products are worth a lot.
Yep.
And so now they're kind of just running everywhere to get them. It's a larger set of competition to buy things. And there's just kind of a customer frustration that comes from that. Like, if you run a card shop and you weren't able to get enough of the new Magic the Gathering set, and now, like, your regulars have not been able to get their hands on it, and they're upset, and it's, you know, not great. Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a serious growing problem with TCG distributors, at least in the United States. I don't know how the system has gotten by for as long as it has, but since we've had these surge products, you've realized that, you know, these like distributors, they're kind of unreliable and shady. Shifty.
Like, yeah, because I know it's kind of different between different games. Like, sometimes distributors are how a card shop gets their stuff. Other times it's direct from the company.
Looking at you, Pokemon.
I don't know which companies and games do those different systems. So, whatever. But, like, it seems like sometimes a card shop will be, like, trying to get an upcoming new set. And then you'll hear from your card shop owner that, oh, like, our distributor fell through. Yeah, or, like, they
shorted us.
Or they shorted us, or we weren't able to get as much. And, you know, I'm sure that there's people in the comments who can maybe speak to that in more detail.
Please do.
Perhaps if you're involved more with, like, card shops and stuff. But I always find it a little bit weird when, like, they're just like, yeah, the distributors just told us we're not going to get as much as we ordered. Like, it just seems a little weird. So
I find it so strange. I mean, maybe I've never worked in distribution. I don't know how it works on their end, but for years, a card shop would order an amount of product and then that product would just show up. But all of a sudden, it's like the Wild West out there. You order it, it may show up, it may not. And it seems your like local card shops don't even know until it shows up.
I know. Or not. And then also, they said that some of the retailer strategies moving forward, mostly for card shops, are implementing pre-order systems, which, you know, I know a lot of card shops do that.
Hit or miss.
Tell your card shop owners that you want to, you plan on buying this. And so they're kind of gathering all the pre-orders so that you can get a guarantee that you'll be able to get your thing.
Ooh, I've seen that go wrong out too. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is a card shop was not meant to be a kind of like financial institution. You're just supposed to give them money. They give you a product. That's all like they really signed up for. But with these pre-order systems, now you're getting into like debt. Because, you know, guy says, hey, I'm willing to buy half a case of the next Magic the Gathering set. And they're like, okay, that'll cost the X amount. And they might pay it now or they might pay it later. What happens when you put the order in and you're expecting this guy to buy half his case like he said he would and he's nowhere to be found?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends. Like, are you doing down payments? Are you doing, like, a paid in full thing? Also, what happens when the card shop itself, like, still doesn't deliver on the pre-orders? Because I hear that happens,
too. That happens, too. You do a down payment. You paid it all in full up front. Now, one of two things can happen. Neither of them are great. The card shop doesn't want to honor the price that was agreed upon. Maybe the product is scarcer than
that
previously anticipated. Mm-hmm. Or they get shorted and you put out a down payment for X amount of product. They're like, well, we got like half that.
Yeah. So the good thing about that
we can refund you in credit.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about that in a physical card shop is typically you will get a refund. But that's a bigger issue actually on, I think, sites like TCG Player, where cards and products themselves can get scalped and like inflated, and they will literally just cancel your order.
Yeah,
they'll just cancel your
all
order.
All you can do is give them a bad review.
Too bad. Yeah. Also, there is one of the other solutions is joining preferred vendor programs, which can't speak too much to that.
Preferred vendor programs.
I guess like if you're a distributor or a vendor that's like, you know, distributing to many shops across the country, you might have like a preferred program where shops that have like a membership with you, let's say, are more guaranteed. Like they get priority with getting their shipments fulfilled or something like that.
See, I don't like that. I don't like that one bit because why should anybody have to pay more for you to do the job you said you were already going to do?
Yeah, it's one of those things where once there's enough demand for something, there's always going to be a person who is like, are you willing to pay to keep the air quotes, riffraff out, right? And I don't like that because, I mean, you know, I think if you're a card shop owner, it's already hard enough to get the products to have to also, like, pay to be in a kind of preferred program.
So it reminds me of when, you know, the meal delivery apps started having these, like, higher tier of, like, food delivery service, like their premium option or priority, a lot of them call it, where you can put your order in like everybody else, but you can pay, like, an extra, like, $2.99 to get priority where they'll deliver your food, like, first. And I'm always like, but if me and persons B and C all place an order and they're all priority, you're still going to deliver them in an order.
Yeah.
So what am I paying for except for you to do the job you said you were already going to do?
And then one of the last things that's mentioned in this preview is establishing queue or raffle systems to curb scalping, which that's something
the Japanese method.
Yeah. I know in Japan they do a lot of raffle systems. I'm reminded also of kind of how Secret Lairs work for Magic the Gathering, where you just sort of like you're in a queue. Like, it seems like you're guaranteed to eventually get in,
You don't know.
But you don't know what will be available.
You have a essentially a line number with Sleeker Layers. It's not a raffle. Everyone gets put in an order. The problem is you don't know what the order is. You don't know when your name's actually going to get called.
Insane, honestly. I mean, like, I guess this is the nature of card games becoming such a hot commodity again.
Big business.
I was talking to somebody recently, and basically, I sort of was saying, like, it feels like of the big three, I might have mentioned this last week. I'm sorry if I'm repeating the same thing. But
it's the pot of greed, guys. You're used to us repeating ourselves.
But it's basically like, okay, Pokemon TCG is a collector's game.
Yes.
People primarily collect Pokemon cards or seek to collect them. Obviously, you know, there's scalpers and stuff, but you are buying packs to pull cool cards. It's not really a player's game. I don't mean that nobody plays the Pokemon TCG, but more that like the players kind of take a back seat to the collectors in Pokemon.
Right.
And that's just how it has been for the last many years. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is kind of the polar opposite.
It's a player's game.
Cards' value is strictly based on their playability. It is not about like getting a cute, cool alt art Umbreon or like Giovanni and his Mewtwo. It is just, is this card good? Does it work in tournaments? If it's a good card and you need it to compete, it will have a price tag. If not, it won't. Simple as that. Like, obviously, you know, I guess there's like a rarity system added in too, so conveniently the Molcharmies and the Dominus cards or whatever are secret rares, but like, no one cares about the artwork on Dominus Impulse. They just care that it wins them duels.
I don't even know what the artwork is on Dominus Impulse.
Neither do I. And so, you know, that's Yu-Gi-Oh! It's a game about the players. Magic the Gathering is interesting because it feels like it's in a transition period where it's kind of going from being a player's game to being a collector's game.
I still see it as a commander game.
I mean, that's also that.
Because
yeah.
I think it's like a third step. It's like an in-between between a player's game and a collector's game. Because in Magic's case, it's very strange, but people typically only need one copy of a card because all they want to do is put it in their commander deck.
Yeah, that seems like that was the case, but I just think that now it seems like it's moving towards being a collector's game because there are people who are like only interested in getting the Magic the Gathering X Final Fantasy collab or like the Magic X Marvel collab.
Some really nice looking Final Fantasy binders.
Yeah, just presenting them.
They've opened up like 7 collector booster boxes, and it's all shiny. And I'm like, you are. And
the
thing is,
I wanted to be that. Like, I wanted when I heard about the Magic the Gathering Final Fantasy.
I thought about to say My Little Pony for a second there.
Yeah, when I heard about the My Little Pony collab, so I was like thinking that would be me. Like, I'm just gonna try to get all the Final Fantasy cards, present them, and be happy. And I saw the prices and the availability, and I was just like, I don't care anymore. Like, it doesn't take much to dissuade me. Because
it's not easy in these streets.
I was never going to, like, really be playing much more Magic than I already do, even if there were Final Fantasy characters. I was only going to be collecting them. But when the collecting became too much of a barrier for me, I just decided I don't want it. Like, I know there's, like, a cool Lightning Army of One alt art card or something, but I saw the price for it, and it's like, $250, and
oh, that's for the showcase rarity version. Yeah, you can get the non-foil version for less.
Yeah, but like I would want the foil version because she's my favorite character.
Oh, okay, you crazy?
But I'm not crazy because I'm not gonna buy it.
It's okay. I'm eventually gonna get my hands on the showcase rarity for Ishtola, and that's not cheap at all. Well, but I will do it.
That's a good segue also into the next little Magic the Gathering bit of news. There's a new Secret Layers that was announced. Secret Layer.
Paul's been drooling over this.
The Sonic Super Drop.
Well, so there's not much I can say. I really don't know a lot about Sonic the Hedgehog.
I know plenty. I'm a huge Sonic fan, if you can't tell from my shirt.
It's just a franchise I'm not all that close to, but I'll do my best. So Sonic and all his friends and some enemies are coming to Magic the Gathering with Secret Layer Sonic Super Drop. The super speedy hedgehog has captivated fans for decades. Now he's racing from Green Hill Zone to your Magic decks in 3 brand new Secret Lair drops. Featuring iconic items, adorable artwork, and new to Magic cards, this super drop has it all.
So it's dropping 7 new to Magic cards, and then I guess the rest of the cards are just Sonic versions of existing cards.
Yes, and when they do these new to Magic secret layers, typically they have mechanics that are wholly unique to those cards as well. So it can make for a fun experience if you want to build a commander deck around them.
So the 7 characters we got were Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, Amy, Dr. Eggman, and Shadow. And then also a Super State card, which is basically Supersonic. And then we got some items, I guess. These are called the Turbo Gear.
Artifacts.
Yeah, what am I thinking? It's Magic the Gathering. So, like, for instance, you can have Knuckles Gloves, Shadow's Air Shoes, the Egg Hammer, the Pico Pico Hammer.
That's Amy's hammer, right?
Yeah. Okay. Sonic's Power Sneakers.
They have a name?
Yeah, that's what they're always called. Is just the Power Sneakers. Oh, that's not really brought up in most recent games, but the Tornado, which is the plane that Tails has, and an Egg Pawn, which looks like it's just a token. It's a card meant to be used as a token.
And then the last one is the Chasing Adventure, which is a series of instants and sorceries. There's the Generous Gift, which features Elephant the Elephant.
It's like one of the small creatures that's on Green Hill Zone, I think.
Open the Armory. Amy's looking for a hammer. I'm guessing you can search your library for an equipment card or something.
Have no fear, Amy Rose is here. She says that in Sonic Adventure.
Fabricate. It features Tails working on a plane. Deadly Dispute. There's Shadow with a Chaos Emerald. Unexpected Windfall. I know that card. And that's Knuckles guarding the Master Emerald?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then Soul Ring, a staple in every Magic deck. And it actually is a cool-looking Soul Ring.
Yeah, it's Sonic just kind of jumping through the ring.
Though I do think my favorite card in all of this is the Treasure Token, which is a ring. It's a Sonic ring.
So these are going to be secret layers. You can get the non-foil versions for $29.99 or the rainbow foil versions for $39.99. And that's for each one of these. The first one with the characters, though, is $39.99 for the non-foil and $49.99 for the rainbow
foil. Oh, so they went up on the... Interesting.
Yeah, so as a Sonic fan, obviously I would like to get these cards. I think that'd be cool. If you can... Alec promised to remind me when this even goes on sale. Like, I won't even remember.
I will tell you the same thing I've told everybody else. I will hop in line as soon as possible. And when I get in, I'll send a message out to the homies. If y'all want something, you gotta tell me. Yeah. And I'll put the order in.
Yeah, I'm just so checked out.
You won't be awake.
Yeah, I'm checked out of the secret layer system. I don't really love it. I wish that I could just pre-order it like you know, what is it called, like, you know, just
made to order.
Yeah, like a made to order system, but
it says a drop, and yeah, that means it's a drop. Limited time, and once it's gone they will hike up the prices of these cards like god. Like, you don't want to, Paul, I promise you, you do not want to have to get them on the secondary market.
I don't. It, but here's the thing though, if it's literally so, just like what I was saying about, you know, the Final Fantasy stuff, if I miss this secret layer drop, I just will not get these cards. I'm not going to buy scalped cards, period. I just will not do it because I don't like Magic enough to do that. Like, but I love Sonic the Hedgehog. Do you like
Sonic enough?
But, I mean, I can get plushes and other figures and other crazy stuff all day long.
Plushes and figures, that's true.
So, I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, like, if I can get it, that's cool. If I can't, it sucks. But yeah, as for the actual material of the secret layer, it just further proves to me that, like, Wizards and Hasbro, anything goes.
Whatever's going to make them a buck, they will partner anything with just goes. About anybody.
Yeah, they're just like, listen, we'll partner with anyone, we'll make you a secret layer, and make you Universes Beyond.
Because when you think about it, it's extremely easy. You know, you partner with a brand, and then you print paper.
Yeah, all you're really doing, I mean, I'm... generalizing here.
We're making.
Obviously, there's a lot of licensing know-how, but like, it's really just you're kind of getting the art done, and then it's on a card.
And people so. Actually just throw their life savings at you. I need all 3 in foil, and I need 10 of them. Give them to me now.
Because there is like a crowd of people, much like with sneakers and every other hot collectible, where it's like, you know, you buy one to use, then you buy one to never open. And that means that you're buying two of all of them. And you got to get the foil rainbow versions, which if I'm totaling the prices of these correctly, that's $130.
Yep.
Twice. So $260 if you were able to get two of all of the foil things.
Nah, chief. I'm actually really glad that when they were doing the Lord of the Rings Universes Beyond set, that they did not include this style of secret lair. Because
yeah, this is before they changed the secret layers, right?
Yeah, this is before they did their major change. And I remember I bought the products that probably would have ended up as their secret layer. So instead of, because we got a series of cards in Lord of the Rings that had new mechanics and brought back like some very old keywords that weren't really used in a lot of modern Magic cards. And but instead of having it as a secret layer drop, I think that was the animated Hobbit movie cards were the secret layer. These cards were a part of was it called a scene pack or something like that?
Oh, where I it was remember this, those. What were those?
These like boxy bundles, essentially. You bought them. It had the, what was it, six cards? It was like, I think there was two versions of them with six cards.
Oh, was it the ones where like, they would like make up a picture?
Yeah, they made a picture.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They had that combined art. You can line up together. So you got one of each card, which is perfect because I was putting on a commander deck. And you got some packs. And I thought that was pretty solid value for what I wanted. Now, I was admonished by multiple people who were like, that wasn't worth it. You wasted your money. You're an idiot and a fool. But I wanted it, and I was happy with it. It's still, to me, it's better value than like secret layer drops, only because it took me substantially less time to do it all.
It is like, I don't know. I mean, I guess just these Magic collabs are fine. I'm still sorting out my overall view on them because I think that there's like, I have little thought, like pieces of opinions on like the different parts of it. But like overall, I don't know if I like it or dislike it. Like it seems like there's a sect of people who obviously don't like it and a sect of people who do. But for me, as somebody who is, I'm not a Magic hater. I mean, I have a small amount of Magic cards, and I play it maybe once a year. But I don't dislike it. I mean, it's fine. It's pretty fun when you play. It puts me in an odd spot when it comes to these cards because it's like, well, I like Sonic the Hedgehog. I'd like to get the cards, but I'm also just probably not going to wake up and join the Secret Lair queue. And I know the sort of person I am. And this is like with many purchases in my life, I kind of follow that whole, if I missed the sale, it wasn't meant to be type of mentality. Like some people don't follow
we don't
that.
Like your kind.
Yeah, Alec, you might be different. Maybe you're just like, oh, I missed the sale, well, I'll still buy it somehow. But I'm like, okay, if I miss this window of opportunity, it will never, I'm not going to get the scalped version unless there's some other exception, I don't know, but like, I mean, generally that's how I am with my purchases. So
I just won't miss a sale.
Yeah, that's true. You're just like, oh, I'll just wake up.
I'll be there. I mean, I've participated in, ever since Marvel, I've participated in every Secret Lair I've wanted to. And I've been able to purchase a product each time, which is nice, though it's not always a product I want because they sell out. But you know, did each time, did it take like, 6 hours? Yes. Yes, it did.
Well, anyway, there's one last little TCG thing I want to talk about.
Oh, what you got?
So, according to this article, yeah, the first ever Disney Lorcana TCG World Championship World Champion has been announced.
Okay.
So, the first Disney Lorcana Trading Card Game World Championship was an incredible experience for fans to watch all weekend long. Congratulations to Din Kang Pham for defeating Edmund Xu in the final to earn the first one-of-one Golden Mickey Mouse Brave Little Taylor card. Viewed by more than 130,000 fans across the world, the broadcast team kept the energy high and the competition fierce. What a freaking press release. Anyway.
I mean, it's a press release.
So what's interesting actually is, well, here's what the guy had to say. He says, I still can't believe it. My hand was amazing, of course. I beat insane odds. I can't believe I won against Zach Bivens, the third place winner, for example, and against Ed Chu on the draw. Amazing games and so much fun, said Din Kang Pham, known as DKP to the Disney Lorcana TCG community. He comes from Germany, and he's a regular at many stores in the area. Interesting thing about this guy, he used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Actually.
Yo, I knew that name was familiar.
Yeah, I've spoken
to him. He was a top player.
Yeah, he was a top Yu-Gi-Oh! Player for a long time. He, I know, has sort of spoken a little bit on Twitter about how he dropped competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! Because of the prizing, lack of prizing. That was actually kind of his number one thing. I remember when I asked him about it, he was just sort of saying, like, yeah, it wasn't really that, like, I didn't like Yu-Gi-Oh! Anymore. It's just that I found the prizing was not, didn't feel commensurate with
not worth the effort.
And so, yeah, here's the picture of the golden Mickey Mouse card. This is kind of just like a picture crop, so like it probably looks far better in person.
Yeah, I mean, it looks ugly here, but I'm sure in person it's awesome, and I'm jealous.
And it's a one of one, so like who knows how much. I mean, that'll just be worth whatever it
is. It's whatever he says it is.
Deemed to be worth. And they announced some other upcoming events in North America and stuff like that.
Was there a cash prize at all with this tournament? I'm assuming not, because I feel like they would have said
it if
there were.
I don't think there was. I didn't see anything in the article about a cash prize, but I think the insinuation is probably that, like, that Mickey Mouse is maybe going to be worth, like,
I mean, somebody will be willing to pay him an obscene amount of money for it, because it's their very first prize, like world champion prize card. It's also Disney related. It's all, yeah. There's a lot. If there was no cash prize, there kind of is.
Yeah. They also gave him this cool little trophy and yeah. And I'm assuming there's some stuff that Top Cut received as well. So
I noticed you're not very impressed with his trophy. As someone who's received multiple trophies playing card games, I guess such things are old hat to you.
No.
But some of us don't have any card game trophies because they were taken away at the last possible round.
I like the look of the trophy. I kind of can't tell what it's supposed to be, though. Like, is it just like a little spiraling?
I honestly have no clue. I thought it was just like, I thought it was maybe like ink that had been like frozen. Because inking is a big part of the game. I have no clue. It's just one picture. Maybe if I had like a more angles look at it, I could tell better.
Well, anyway, congratulations to him. First Disney Lorcana World Champion
Ex-Yu-Gi-Oh!
World Champion.
I know people might hate me in the comments. I'm just going to go out and say it. Yu-Gi-Oh! Breeds a different kind of card game player.
Maybe so.
Just saying.
I will say this. I think if you can succeed in Yu-Gi-Oh!, I think you can succeed in pretty much any card game. People will hear that, and I know some people say that's like me being biased about Yu-Gi-Oh!, like saying Yu-Gi-Oh! Is so special. I'm not. I'm actually saying that Yu-Gi-Oh! Is kind of a nightmare to play. It's so demanding on the amount of things you have to keep up with. And I don't say that in like a cool skill expression way. I say it in a like it's fucked up and it can barely get a new player to play the goddamn game way. But if you can survive the trial by fire that is Yu-Gi-Oh! And reach the pinnacle and play it really well and stuff, I do feel it is a game that's quite rewarding, and it's a skill set that will make other games feel maybe pretty pedestrian by comparison.
Paul said they sound easy, light work.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying.
Your favorite card game is light work to Yu-Gi-Oh! Players.
Anyway, I think that's all the trading card game is.
That's fair.
That we could find anyway. You can also, if people want to, send us other stories. We have a Twitter account.
That's true.
And, yeah, community.
Yeah, I was trying to find a Pokemon crime story, but sadly, the Google News feed is terrible, and all I got were repeats of stories I've already talked about. So maybe next week. So Paul and I only just found out, like right before we started potting, that today was Bandai Namco's summer showcase.
Yeah, there was. I remember we were watching that, and there were a few games that they were already announced, but they were showcasing some games that I was interested in, like My Hero Academia All's Justice.
Have you played a My Hero video game?
No, but I've watched you play one. I watched you play Ultra Rumble.
Oh, the Battle Royale. I forgot that existed. Is that still around?
Yeah, I think so. People still play it, apparently. Okay. But yeah, Bandai Namco started off with the official reveal of My Hero Academia All's Justice, which is an action fighting game that's being developed in tandem with the anime's final season. It promises a game-exclusive take on the final battle of the series and will feature the entirety of Class 1A as part of the roster.
All right, so that just screams to me that well, this game has to come out and the anime was too slow, so we are gonna
just give it its own.
We're gonna kind of wing it a little bit on the ending.
I do think it's cool though. I mean, like, you know, I'm obviously a huge My Hero Academia fan. I love the world, the universe, the characters. I've been watching Vigilantes this anime season, really enjoyed that. So while I don't normally play these anime kind of fighting games that Bandai Namco makes,
calling them fighting games feels like a disservice to the fighting game community.
I will probably try this out. Just because I like,
let's call them battlers.
I think that's actually a better term for it. Because, I mean, they tend to be kind of just like, I don't know what.
So, okay.
They're like sort of arena fighters.
I'm going to throw them a little bit of bail, but also criticism.
Okay.
They are fighting games at their core. But what they lack is the expert balancing and then and updates that traditional fighting games do get. Because a lot of these games, they have infinite combos, they have stall tactics, and then they get way fewer updates than you might see in Mortal Kombat, Tekken, or Street Fighter.
Yeah, so I'll probably give this a crack. I've never, like, I remember back when, like, the Ultimate Ninja Storm games and stuff would just good come out times. Every year, and, like, now it's a whole thing, but this will be fun. Anything that spoke to you in this showcase?
So we got another trailer for Code Vein 2. Code Vein is this anime Souls-like game. I played it during the pandemic. I had a good time. You know, it had Bandai's like pretty expert blending of like cell shading and like anime graphics. So it looked really cool, and I enjoyed it. And we've known about Code Vein 2 for a while, and so getting the story trailer finally put what I was seeing into context, because Code Vein 2, essentially you had like humans and you had these like vampire like people. What were they called? Revenants. Yeah. And the revenants were preying upon the people, and your character was a revenant, but you were a good revenant, or like you were a half revenant. I forget. Anyway, in Code Vein 2, it seems that the humans and revenants are getting along now, but there's a third entity and they're fighting against that, and they have like a golden blood. So you can still kind of keep that that blood aesthetic that Code Vein was known for. I don't at all care for the new art style, but I'm going to play it anyway because, well, I beat the first one. Might as well play the second one too.
Dragon Ball Z Kakarot Daima DLC.
Now, to be sadly, I did not actually watch the entirety of the Daima DLC showcase, but I'm assuming we're getting the full Daima, because I know in Dragon Ball, what is the name of that fighting game?
Fighters?
Not Fighters, the last one.
Not Xenoverse. Not
Xenoverse.
Sparking Zero?
Sparking Zero. Yeah. Sparking Zero did like a half DLC where it had like Super Saiyan 3 Vegeta, but it didn't have Super Saiyan 4 Goku. I'm assuming Kakarot being a story-based game and not a like fighting game, it'll just have all of Daima in it. I'm going to have to go back and watch the trailer because I do like Kakarot. And Daima was a good show. Well, good for a Dragon Ball show. I don't want to get into debates about good or bad anime with you people. We already know how that goes.
Yeah. So that's happening. And then the final thing that they showed was Digimon Story Time Stranger with a gameplay deep dive.
And it was way deeper than I expected. I thought we were just going to get a trailer and they were going to call it a day. But they really want to make clear about the different systems in the game to make it as accessible to newer players as possible.
The game showed looks a lot fun. Of combat.
Looks great. I can't wait to play it. I really don't have much to say about Time Stranger. I just can't.
Yeah,
wait
we've
to play.
Talked about it in the podcast before. It's a game that for me kind of resembles a Persona type of game, but the models looked really good and the graphics looked cool. It looks like you're going to get to explore a lot. The combat system seems pretty deep too.
Yeah, because there will be comparisons made to Pokemon, and I guess I'll just shine one major difference in the Digimon battle system versus Pokemon. You have much freer control over the move sets of your Digimon. Pokemon has some like freedom, but you can be quite limited. Digimon's not nearly as limited in that. So you can truly take your favorite Digimon all the way to endgame. You know how in Pokemon sometimes that's harder to do unless you just overlevel to like level 100?
Right. Yeah.
In Digimon, your favorite can be as strong as you want it to be.
Here's something cool. Actually, this is not cool at all. Have you ever used a buy now, pay later loan?
Yes. I hate to say it. Yes, multiple times. Many times.
Like our favorite company, Klarna.
I've used Affirm. I don't think I've used Klarna.
I know some people use PayPal. Like
I have used PayPal.
Well, anyway, according to this article, buy now, pay later loans will soon affect some credit scores. Now, this is a bit more of a like financy type of article than we would normally talk about on here. But I did mention that I don't like the whole like, you know, buy now, pay later system that's become a lot more popular, it feels like, ever since COVID.
I mean, when I got into such systems, I was much younger, and it was before COVID. But I wanted to spend more money than I had, and then I discovered that PayPal's credit system was not reporting back to my credit agency and did not do credit checks. And so I ran that up like crazy.
Yeah.
And now I regret it.
Well, here's what they say. Hundreds of millions of buy now, pay later loans will soon affect credit scores for millions of Americans who use the loans to buy clothing, furniture, concert tickets, and takeout. Scoring company FICO said Monday that it's rolling out a new model that factors the short-term loans into their consumer scores.
FICO?
FICO. Is it FICO or
FICO?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like an acronym, so it kind of doesn't. Anyway. A majority of lenders use FICO scores to determine a borrower's credit worthiness, and previously these loans had been excluded. But now they're going to be included. So if you use Klarna and stuff, be careful.
Yeah, you're about to bomb your credit.
Bomb your credit. Now, how valuable is a credit score? I'm not here to give you financial advice on it.
It's different for every person.
But here's something interesting that they also mentioned in the article. Why haven't the loans previously appeared in credit scores? Typically, when using buy now, pay later loans, consumers pay for a given purchase in 4 installments over 6 weeks in a model more similar to a layaway than a traditional credit card. And the loans are marketed as zero interest, and most require no credit check or only a soft credit check. The main three reporting bureaus, that's Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, haven't yet incorporated a standard way of including these, since they don't adhere to existing models of lending and repayment. But now, FICO is planning on using data from the bureaus to calculate its own credit score. So, all the boring stuff aside, I will just say this much. I think that buy now, pay later is really, really deceptive. It's a deceptive way to get people into debt, and I discourage people from using them. And unless you, I mean, I don't, is there even a time when, like, you should be?
When you want something and you don't have the money for it, I think that's the time when you do it.
Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah, I don't know. I can never get behind like buy now, pay later as a system. I don't find it very good.
Well, maybe you get behind it if it were a part of your favorite video game.
Oh?
Buy now, pay later is coming to free-to-play games like Fortnite is my next article.
Wow. So you're going to be able to like... Okay.
Most definitely. So... Buy now, pay later payment provider Affirm has partnered with video game commerce company Ixola, I don't know that name at all, and will soon allow people to pay off in-game purchases of $50 or more via payment plans. Yes, you will soon be able to finance your next pricey Fortnite skin.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, first spotted by GameSpot, they recently announced that they're going to be working together to bring new buy now, pay later options to various video games. They have not yet disclosed a list of games that will support it, but they have partnered with Fortnite, so it seems likely that game is going to be... That's crazy. So, we already know that, like, you know, cosmetics in these games and microtransactions are a bad enough system. Definitely. Like, it's already sort of predatory. So, now you're telling me that... You can buy a Fortnite skin or whatever, or some Fortnite skins and other junk for like $50 and then be in debt to that for the next like couple months.
Hey, like, and you make that sound such a bad thing, but you know, the shop in Fortnite is time gated. Like, things rotate out of the shop. If you don't buy it today, who knows when it'll show up back in the shop? It might show back up in 2 weeks. It might show up in 2 months. It might show up in 2 years.
You know, that's so true. And they're going to take so much advantage of that entire little ecosystem of like, you know, things are in the shop for a limited amount of time. You don't have the money to pay for it right now. And mom won't give it to you. And so you can instead go to...
Ever since I became 32, my mom stopped giving me Fortnite money.
Yeah. So you can use your buy now, pay later system to quickly buy the things that you can't afford while they're still in the shop. And just pay on them into perpetuity, because like you will constantly be bombarded with a new thing to buy.
Now, I will say on the bright side, it, at least in my experience, it's a little hard to spend $50 at one time on Fortnite. Now, I can't speak to other video games, but I don't know when you should ever need to buy like a $50 V-Buck package in Fortnite. Like, are you trying to buy all the skins at one time?
I guess that the target is young people. Like, obviously, I guess like a 12-year-old can't sign up for a Affirm payment, I hope.
Well, if their parents have an account, and I think, because I've used Affirm, I think all you need to use is like, all you need is a phone number and a password. So, and parents are you know, they're kind of forgettable. Like, you could probably figure out the password, and if you know your parents' phone number, you're in the game.
Alex has spoken like a real previous whale with the buy now, pay laters.
Oh, okay. All right. Look.
Either way, though, I don't like this at all. I think the sound of it is just atrocious. I
don't think anyone should be financing microtransactions.
Yeah, it's like financing maybe some things like furniture, I guess, like whatever, sure. But like, God, microtransactions in a video game? Because those are already so tempting to, like, there's already, they're so, what is the word? Like, this, I don't like it.
It's rough stuff. I personally don't think you should finance something that literally isn't, by the time you finish paying it, will not be worth what you paid for it. And digital goods are especially bad for that, because essentially Epic tells you this skin is worth 1600 V-Bucks, but they're just saying it is. Once you've purchased it, is that skin worth 1600 V-Bucks? Well, technically no, because you can't sell it.
Yeah, you can't really.
It becomes worthless.
Although there were some headlines about games that were going to be like experimenting with ways for you to return, air quotes, your, or like trade away your like skins and other like microtransaction stuff. But like, it was obviously going to be for like a fraction of the price or something like that.
But hey, maybe what you do is you finance, you know, buying like $100 worth of V-Bucks, buy all your stuff, and then you go to last week's pod episode, and you find out how to refund all those purchases through Fortnite.
Oh yeah.
And then you can pay back the, you just
end up in debt to get some money. Payments. It's like, ooh, that sounds terrible.
And now that FICO is tracking those payments and giving and adding them to your credit score, maybe this is a strategy to build credit. Ooh. Guys, do not listen to
please
me.
Please don't do like
this
any of this.
This is not financial advice. Terrible, I said all of that idea in jest, and I know most of you know that, but I feel like somebody is already typing very angrily at me.
There's always someone who doesn't know. Well, here's another little quick story. You ever get annoyed when you go to the movie theater?
Yes.
And good start. You ever get annoyed when you go to the movie theater and you have to sit through like 25 minutes of ads before
what?
The movie starts?
Whoa. That's literally the best part.
Well, it's funny you say that, because AMC theaters now warn moviegoers about lengthy 25 to 30 minutes of previews before movies start. Yeah.
Did people not know that previews happen?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I kind of felt the same way. Here's what they say, though. That's right. No more guessing. No more showing up on time only to sit through trailers you've already seen online. AMC's website now includes a note when purchasing tickets that bluntly tells you the movie starts 25 to 30 minutes after the listed showtime. The new notice appears when selecting showtimes, a small but significant reminder that if your ticket says 7 p.m., you can probably stroll in at 7:25 and not miss a second of the actual movie. For many of us, this isn't news. AMC has been stretching the pre-show window for years, tacking on trailer after trailer, ad after ad, until the practice became borderline farcical. Earlier this year, a Connecticut lawmaker with the very cinematic name Martin Looney floated the idea of legally forcing theaters to disclose how long trailers can run. Okay, I agree with you. I never saw ads in theaters as a particularly bad thing or something that I like viewed in contempt, because to me they've served two purposes. Three, I guess. One, you could show up late. Like, literally, like, if you and your friends bought a movie for 7 and you're going in a group and people are late. Just
reinforcing CP time.
Yeah, you can show up at, you know, 7:16 and, like, the ads are still playing. You don't miss any of the movie. 2, and I think this is the more relevant one, I like seeing trailers in movie theaters. Like, I don't really have a problem with it.
If I miss the trailers, I'd rather just reschedule and watch and catch a different showing.
Okay, that's an extreme.
That's just how I feel.
Alec wants is his trailers. I like my trailers. But I do like watching trailers. I think that they're nice, especially as somebody like me who, like, I don't go to the movies terribly often. I actually don't tune into, like, trailer culture very much. So sometimes I really am seeing a trailer for the first time in the theater, so I don't really mind it. And then reason number 3, it's time to buy snacks. Like, usually if you're with a group or something, like, it's a bit of opportunity for people to, like, buy snacks, use the bathroom, kind of just get situated and stuff. And so, I guess, like, I always thought it was, like, a cultural norm that we all just kind of knew you could show up to the theater a little late.
But I guess maybe because we don't go to the movie theater as much as maybe we once had, we haven't noticed a change in trailer culture. Because, see, they're talking about 20 to 30 minutes of trailers. But in my...
I remember it being shorter.
I thought it was 10 minutes of trailers.
I think it also depends on the theater you go to, they say. Because, like, according to this is, like, more of an AMC theater-specific thing.
I used to exclusively go to AMC theaters.
I remember I used to go to, there was, like, a Regal cinema that was in around, like, there were a couple of Regal cinemas where I lived. Then Cinemark Tinseltown, or like Cinemark, whatever it is. I think the theaters we call, like, Tinseltowns. And there, I never felt like there was much difference between those. I haven't been to that many AMC theaters, I suppose. Or maybe I have. I don't really know. I don't think
about it. In my hometown, we had one big AMC. Well, we had one big AMC theater close by, and we had another big AMC, like, across the river. And I never noticed that our, like, trailers took longer, or we had to wait longer to watch movies. I always felt like there weren't enough. I was like, oh, come on. Wait, already getting to the movie. You could fit like 2 or 3 more trailers in here. I know you can.
Will this lead to shorter previews? Doubtful. Studios pay a premium for that ad space, and theaters aren't exactly in a position to turn down the revenue.
They need that money.
Especially not in a post-COVID era, where limited edition popcorn buckets are treated like collectibles.
They are. I do like buying those.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't mind this change. Like, it's good that they're putting it on the website. It doesn't hurt anybody to put it there. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's all just kind of an interesting bit. Like, there were people who were, like, celebrating this, and there were people who were saying it's stupid. I don't have, I guess, an opinion on the fact that they're doing it, but I just thought it was a nice opportunity to sort of talk about, like, I guess, our views on, like, trailers before movies. Like, it sounds like you like your trailers.
I would... There was one time I walked into a movie, watched the trailers, and then left, and I was very satisfied.
What movie?
It was Blue Beetle. Remember?
Oh, you didn't watch the Blue Beetle movie?
I did not.
Why not?
My older brother got sick.
Oh, okay. You made it sound like you literally went in, watched the trailers, and then chose to leave when the movie started.
No. Like, but frame 1. He got sick 5 minutes into the movie. And okay. The weird part was, wasn't really put off by it. I felt like I had a good experience.
Well, I thought that for me, like, trailers were just sort of... I didn't have a real problem with them. I didn't, like, I think that maybe the people who are angry, this was something that sort of came up, is people are more exposed to trailers online now. So, like, I remember as a kid, the times that I saw trailers in the movie theater was, like, my first time seeing trailers.
Same.
But, like, nowadays, I guess, if you're just scrolling Twitter, like, the trailer is just playing in front of you half the time.
That's true.
And, like, it's recommended to you on YouTube and it's on TikTok or something. So now I think people maybe have less patience for rewatching the same trailers that they've seen over and over because, you know, they just don't want to... It's like, I mean, short attention spans and stuff. Like, I just need to be, like, given something new.
It makes sense. I feel like I probably wouldn't feel the same way I do about trailers if I'd seen all of them already.
Yeah, but so you haven't.
I avoid movie trailers like the plague. I don't like spoilers, and I feel like... In the modern movie trailer tries to tell you the entire movie within said trailer. And I don't need all that. I want surprise. I still want there to be surprises. I don't even want to know who the full cast is, really. I just want to sit down and be surprised.
I'm going to lead us out with a little AI story.
Oh, God. Here comes Allen Iverson.
So Crunchyroll ran embarrassingly bad ChatGPT subtitles on its new anime series.
Okay, but they've been doing like AI like subtitles for a minute. Like, I mean, they're bad, but is this article worthy?
Yeah, because I guess this time it was really bad. The streamer previously said it had no plans to use AI in the production of its anime programming.
They lied.
They lied. What company doesn't? Well, anyways, the subtitles for one of Crunchyroll's newest anime series makes it pretty clear the company is going all in on ChatGPT. This week, as viewers logged on to Crunchyroll to check out Studio Gokumi's Necronomico and the Cosmic Horror Show, many were surprised to see the series' subtitles were filled with typos, grammatical errors, and explicit references to ChatGPT.
What is a reference to ChatGPT?
So there's an example in the screenshot there.
It says, ChatGPT said, "When ich die Welt von ihr en weiter." Oh, I don't know how to say the next ones.
Yeah, so basically this, literally it is showing ChatGPT, like the word ChatGPT said this as part of the subtitle. So like somebody dumped the translated like script onto ChatGPT, and this is, I think, the German translation for the show, and like they copied and pasted what ChatGPT gave them, and it even included the part where it says ChatGPT said this. So they didn't even take out the reference to ChatGPT
in the subtitles. Why is ChatGPT even referencing itself when it's supposed to just be, I don't know.
Now, in addition to that, there were times where just the subtitles that it made just made no sense. One part said, "Is game over? If you fall, you are out," which is just like not, you know, very good. And then there's like this one where it says like, "Oh, capital I, it is so hard. Oh my," and there's like a weird space between my and the exclamation point.
I hope that's actually what she said in that scene and not just a jumble of words.
Yeah, so Crunchyroll has been open about its desire to use AI as it focused on becoming more of a lifestyle brand. But this situation is decidedly at odds with Crunchyroll president Rahul Perini's past comments about the company having no plans to use AI to produce its programming.
Well, who would have thought a leader of a corporation lied?
Yeah, speaking to Forbes back in April, Perini said that Crunchyroll was, quote, "not considering AI in the creative process out of a desire to maintain the authenticity of its series and films." He also stressed that Crunchyroll would not use AI in ways that would impact voice actors. They instead said that they were looking into ways that it could be used to improve discoverability, recommendations, and personalization. So I guess by their metrics...
You did discover this article.
That's true. So it worked. Yeah, I guess it sounds like they were trying to pass it off as like, yeah, we're just going to use AI to like, you know, fuel our algorithm so you get better anime recommendations or something. Sounds innocuous enough. But no, they're throwing scripts into ChatGPT and then dumping the results.
Spitting them out into your TV.
Yeah, spitting them out into your TV, not even excluding the part where it says like ChatGPT, whatever. So.
Like, things like this annoy me. You know, at one point I used to work with AI.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I know, guys, I'm an AI hater. What do you mean I worked with AI? But I, you know, AI is a useful tool, and I needed money, so I worked with AI for a time. And my job was simply just to, well, double check what like AI large language models would spit out. And oftentimes you just find that they make all sorts of little errors. They can be correct maybe 80-something percent of the time, but then, like, in that 20%, punctuation errors, like, grammatical errors, capitalization errors.
Something that seems...
You still need a person to actually...
verify these
double
things.
Check that. It sounds like Crunchyroll fired all their translators, and maybe they kept one, and they're like, okay, yep, oversee all of our AI scripts now.
It also feels like there's just a quality control issue here because, like, when you copy and paste stuff, a lot of times formatting won't always, like, transfer over. So sometimes there will be spaces that get added between commas and words or, like, other parts of punctuation. And this is a simple matter of, like, no one even looked at this. Like,
no.
This screenshot where it says, like, ChatGPT said, semicolon, and then, like, a thing. You, even if you're using ChatGPT to do the translation, somebody should at least look and like take out references to ChatGPT. But like this shows me no one's even double checking. I mean, like we are dump in, dump out, copy, like paste straight to your TV.
Like, I watch a lot of Crunchyroll and have for years, so I kind of knew immediately when they started using AI-generated subtitles, because I went from a Crunchyroll where once in every maybe like 20 different anime I watch the entire shows, I would see one like translation error, like a grammatical error or a repeated word or something. But the moment they start using these like AI-generated translations, Jesus, you can't even get through a single episode of damn near any anime without finding some just...
The typos have increased.
It's rampant, it's everywhere, and I guess they're just fine with it.
Apparently so. So I thought that was kind of an interesting one. Anywho, though, that brings us to our viewer questions for the week.
Oh, time to draw two, because this is the Pot of Greed.
As you guys know, you can submit viewer questions at the link in the description. We'll read them and talk about them. They can be Yu-Gi-Oh! Or otherwise.
Do you guys miss the pot?
I only replaced it this week. I mean, because this week I got
the Dark Magician. Oh, I meant like drawing them from the pot.
Oh, you know what?
Because I feel like we got used to not doing it.
We should bring it back.
We should bring, even if we can't write the full questions on there, I do miss drawing them.
Okay.
But I'll let you guys decide. Tell us in the comments if we should bring drawing the questions out the pot. It will be extra work on Paul's shoulders, but he can handle it.
Thanks, Alec. Good to know that you're offloading it onto me. Yeah, but I wouldn't mind bringing the pot back. I do think it's been a while, and I got too comfy just reading them off this tablet.
But to be fair, your questions are very long.
Some nowadays. People leave very long ones. There was one in here that was like an essay, and I was like, listen, anyway. So, should Yu-Gi-Oh cards be more aesthetically pleasing to bring in more casuals to the game and collecting side? Pokemon, Digimon, and to an extent, Magic cards are all much nicer to look at, and they pull you in.
While that is an opinion, I think Paul and I can both agree on this one. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Where to start with this? I'm going to start by giving Yu-Gi-Oh! A little bit of credit here and saying some nice things before I kind of tear in a little. I think that Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards do have a certain regality to the look of some of their rarities. Like, I think Ultimate Rares, for instance, have always been a really... They look good. They just...
Agreed.
Yeah, Ultimate Rares, they look really regal. I've always liked that. I even think that just the baseline Ultra Rare in Yu-Gi-Oh! Looks quite nice. And I do feel that some games, their basic sort of like super rare equivalent type cards don't always look good. I think Magic the Gathering rarities tend to not speak to me too much. I'm talking about the like foil effects, not necessarily the art. Okay. The art's different, obviously. There goes my camera. But anyway.
We're face cammed in.
Yeah, but so I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Does a pretty good job of that. And that's kind of where my compliments stop.
Well, I'll toss one in.
Go ahead.
I mean, in Yu-Gi-Oh's inception, I think Yu-Gi-Oh cards looked quite nice. They didn't have nearly as much to write on them, so I think you really got to appreciate the form and the design of the cards. There was more space on cards.
Look was better. Yeah, I agree with that too. I think that something that's kind of made Yu-Gi-Oh cards feel not as pleasant to look at today, I was going to use a different word, but I'll just go with that, is the fact that because card text tends to be so long on a lot of cards, something about that is just very like off-putting. It feels like it's way too dense. There's just too much on the card. And then also, in addition to that, we're feeling the effects of being small size cards versus standard size cards. I think, sure. Like, even just a little bit more space, a slightly larger frame for the art itself would go a long way. We don't really have that, it feels like. I feel like you're still just working on that tiny little square frame that Yu-Gi-Oh cards get. And meanwhile, you know, there are other games that do full arts or even just extended arts.
Yeah, I mean, other games are committing way more space to the card artwork than, you know, traditional Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I mean, you can even see it in Rush Duel cards, right? Even they are dedicating more card room for artwork.
I know. And it's great because Rush Duel does a good job of it. Like, the cards are already, like, literally brighter.
Yep.
They have a larger frame for the art. And I think that they're even
some classical elements.
Yeah, they're aesthetically easier to look at. Like, one of the things I've bitched about in Yu-Gi-Oh! For ages is the level stars. I get that it's kind of cool looking to have, like, all of the level stars visible on the card. Like, it makes Blue Eyes seem literally more imposing than a Celtic Guardian because it's got, like, right. 8 of the stars versus 4 or whatever. But once you get past 8, it is so hard to visually tell, like, the amount of stars between, like, a 9 and a 10 and an 11. Like, they all just run together.
Is it
an 11
or is it a 9? You got to stare at it for a while and then pray to God you're not miscounting.
Yeah, so I think that Yu-Gi-Oh! Should be doing more full arts, extended arts, something. They won't.
Or drastically switch to standard-sized cards.
That would be very hard for them to do.
Yeah,
but man, it would be good.
It's not feasible.
So yeah, your question's totally right. I think that, like, it would help to make kind of the lottery cards probably feel more exciting to pull. Like, when they do an alt art, having that be full art would be really nice. Anything to add?
No, I agree.
Okay, well, here's the next one. I think more people would enjoy current Yu-Gi-Oh! If a wider variety of decks got support that are in the same range of power level. Would you guys agree to this? This comes from Dre. They often leave comments. And this one, I think, is there. I see no lie really
here. I
feel
like I can't disagree with it only because it supports our, like, mid-core Yu-Gi-Oh! Discussion that we beat over the head over and over again. So I'll try and take a different angle.
Okay. I was going to take the same angle and do my same rant.
No, I do think if Konami focused more of their efforts on pumping new support into these more medium-powered decks, I think even if the decks aren't more competitive, I think those mid-core decks, they actually are that make up more fan favorite decks than, like, top tier decks for a very simple reason. There's simply more of them, and they all perform about the same when compared to the metagame. Let the metagame be itself, and maybe just, I mean, they're kind of already doing it right. Every set has so many new support cards for these significantly weaker decks that will probably never see the light of day. I mean, it gave me new Super Quantal cards, man. Like,
so what you're really saying is mid-core Yu-Gi-Oh! Argument.
Yeah, I failed.
I mean, I hate to say it,
but I failed my goal. I wanted to say something that wasn't what we always say. And
you're,
I think,
not allowed to say anything insightful.
Ultimately,
it always just ends up right back in the same here. Place. No, the long and short of it is this. We just opened Duelist Advance.
Yep.
And had a pretty fun time opening it. There were a lot of really cool cards and some stuff that supported things and whatever. Same goes for Battles of Legend. We opened that recently, whatever. Super Quants got support, and that's fun and that's cool, but, like, also,
they're all common.
They're all deliberately lower power level than Fiendsmith and Ryzeal and Malice and, you know, whatever the current thing, Mr. Rugi and all that stuff. And so, basically, like, where would one go to play their Super Quant deck? No one's saying you can't take it to a regional. Like, literally, you're not, like, physically prevented from doing so. It's just that, like, I think people would enjoy it more if there was a format where you could play these more middling decks against each other, ideally in games where the decks had enough time for their gimmicks to take off and they aren't, like, required to do it all in the first turn.
I think it would be nice if these mid-core decks could be more competitive.
Yeah.
Where it didn't feel like, because, yeah, you can take them to a YCS even, right? But there's a hard cap of what you can really do with these decks. And I think it would be nice if, well, that cap was a bit higher.
Yeah, because effectively there's two solutions. And it sounds like this person is maybe suggesting one of them, which is you can make all these little mid-core kind of decks meta power level, or you can keep them basically where they are and just create a space for them that's that current power level.
I have an idea.
Okay.
That's what Konami could do. All right, look, every time you make new support for one of these, like, mid-core decks, you put a little symbol on the card, right? You put a little symbol on it, right?
Oh, like a power level symbol.
Yeah, you put a little symbol on there. And then you create a type of time wizard, time galaxy format, right? Where you can only use cards from, like, a certain period and cards that have the symbol on them.
There's something to that.
It's not perfect, but that was just the kind of my working idea of morphing the Time Wizard format problem and merging it with the mid-core problem. Because a lot of times these mid-core decks are older decks that could have been a part of a specific Time Wizard format, but Time Wizard formats can never get new cards.
There's something to be said, too, about like it's difficult to support old stuff. Like, mm-hmm. even when old archetypes get new support in the modern day, it still tends to kind of go forgotten about. Like, Gladiator Beast, an example from earlier, you know, they got new support in 2019. It did not make the meta then. Nope. They got new support this year. It did not make the meta now. They're still just somewhere in the middle of the pack. I don't even think that Gladiator Beasts do really anything super broken. They can put up some negates, and that's cool.
And they're not the worst deck either.
But they're also not garbage. It's just they kind of struggle from being... Obviously, they have like this old base that they're working from, which is an archetype from 2008. And so, fundamentally, if they want to keep some of the flavor of Gladiator Beasts, then they need to still work around that base design philosophy of, like, you know, the battle phase stuff and try to make it where you can at least run some of your favorite old glads.
Right.
But fundamentally, those cards suck. Their stats are bad. They have to battle and swap, and they can get ashed, and they can get impermed, and all these problems with them. And the new support helps, but it's still working from, like, a flawed premise. And so there's just kind of, in my opinion, a cap to how good a deck like that can ever be, even with new support, unless you quite literally like dig up the foundation and just throw it all out. So we're just playing Neo Gladiator Beast where there's not a single card in the deck that is from the first line of Glad support. But at that point, that's what I guess that really showcases is how an archetype like a Mitsurugi or a Ryzeal or a Malice or a Fiendsmith, it just gets to be designed from the ground up to be good.
And designed to just be mashed together.
Will so always you do work whatever well. You want. Whatever. I'm not going to get into this whole goddamn thing. You guys know my thoughts on it. It is what it is. Question's right, Dre. Good point. Thanks
but
for the
we got
submission.
Into a mid-core conversation, which means it's time to end the pod.
I like that. That's a good... yeah, the moment... That should be the new rule. If Paul starts bitching about mid-core, then the podcast automatically ends. Cool. Well, this has been a fun one. We're glad you guys joined us, and we hope that
you
enjoy your week. We'll try to have a bonus episode out.
We're shooting it tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll try to have one
out.
So
that means it'll go up the day after the pod airs.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah, Friday. And I think next week we might do a different episode where we answer some more pot questions. This time maybe with the cards in the pot.
That'll be fun.
Since that's what people want. Cool. Okay. Well, that's going to be it.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.